Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this episode, we have walleye tournament angler Corey Heiser back on the show. We've had Corey on before. Great conversations in the past. This is another one. This one, we spend a lot of time focusing on forward-facing sonar. Specifically, especially when we start off here, I wanted to include a big part of this conversation or a lot of my questions asking Corey about rigging, the different ways of rigging forward sonar on your boat, because there's a variety pack of how you can install this stuff, and it ultimately means, you know, how to utilize it or how you plan on using it just for, you know, the function of it all. And I think that's very educational in itself, is just talking about, you know, the different ways of rigging forward sonar. And Corey's a great guy for that. He's a tournament angler. He sees, you know, all the high-end ways of, you know, where people and all the different utilizations of forward sonar. And he's got, you know, he's definitely got a great setup himself. He describes it all very well. But I think it's a very educational part of the conversation, just talking about rigging forward sonar. And then, you know, the function of it and just the, all the learning and just, you know, when you're using it, how you're using it, what you're looking for. And Corey's just got great stories about, you know, just the scenarios and situations he's been in the last handful of years where forward sonar was very meaningful and the things that he learned from it. And they're just all new, fresh stories and just great. It's just a great conversation. And, you know, that being said, in true Corey fashion, we can't get through an entire conversation without talking about fishing. Specifically, at the end of this, we close it out with some great spring walleye stuff. And I'm talking about, you know, just fishing walleyes in shallow, cold, clear water. So a great conversation that is going to be relevant now for those of you that are in places where you can target walleyes, and then, you know, big parts of the Midwest that aren't going to, you know, the inland lakes anyways, that aren't going to open to walleyes, you know, till May most likely. I think that's what most everybody opens up. It's going to be relevant then too. So a great conversation about forward sonar, spring walleyes, yeah, all of it. Great conversation with Corey Heiser. Let's get to it. This episode is brought to you by Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. This episode of the JMO Podcast is brought to you by Shields. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to Shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to Shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Forward-facing sonar rigging, you know, there's different ways to do it. There's different styles. Probably has to do with the different, you know, kind of fishing people are doing. And I think this is an interesting topic. You know, where do we start with this? Should we, you know, can you maybe talk about your setup, maybe a tournament setup, and just the, you know, the different ways that, you know, of rigging it that way and what that's good for? And we can go on down the line there. Like, where do we start with this?
Well, that's a good point, and I appreciate you having me on. And it is something that we've been, you know, blessed to be a part of this technology and this influx of new opportunity to see fish and catch fish that, you know, maybe previously hadn't eluded us. And I think even just answering how I have my boat will have it, how I have it rigged, will spur a whole further discussion, because I have my forward facing sonar rigged in actually multiple different ways on my boat, strictly because there are so many techniques and opportunities to catch them with forward-facing sonar that I don't want to miss out. And so, you know, I do have the kind of the, what I would say was the leading edge of how you rig forward-facing sonar on your trolling motor. So fortunately enough, I do run Lowrance Electronics, and our Active Target 2 has the ability to not interfere with each other. So I actually have two transducers mounted on my trolling motor, one in the forward mode and one in the scout mode. And the scout mode is that wide angle you're looking at 18 degrees of depth with 130 degrees of width. So, you know, applications of under 10 feet of water, I'm able to get a quick picture, a big wide picture. I can see targets and structure very quickly. And then the forward is where you're going to pinpoint in on your structure, pinpoint in on the target that you're trying to attack. And then I also have an active target too on a Bruce City pole in the rear of my boat for those instances where most people think right away is if you're anchor locking or you're fishing out of the back of the boat more stationary. But I will tell you, I found numerous instances when I'm either trolling or pulling bouncers, stuff like that, where I'm taking advantage of that forward facing sonar, looking maybe out to the side or looking even behind the boat, tracking my bait, tracking the depth at what my presentation is and seeing at the levels of the fish. So I guess to really like give you this big broad answer of how someone should maybe think about doing it, it's how I've rigged my tournament boat for all of the instances and all of those cases, kind of all in one.
A non-tournament angler, maybe I'm the only one, but I'm assuming, you know, not everybody's going to invest to have the whole gamut, right? If you're a non-tournament angler, but there's a lot of people that their style of fishing is applicable to, you know, maybe a tournament angler. Or,
I mean, I say this a lot, you know, Taylor, if you're a guy or gal that primarily likes to run their trolling motor off their remote, they like to be in the back of the boat, and they spend a lot of time anchor locking, or they spend a lot of time pulling bouncers, having on an external pole is really probably going to be the most comfortable situation to use it. And there are literally infinite ways that you can take advantage of having that forward-facing sonar in the rear of your boat. If that's where you feel like you're most comfortable fishing, and you feel like that's the way you want to run your boat, there is, like I said, infinite ways that we can take advantage of that technology on an external pole, even from the rear of the boat.
What are some things that you've learned, you know, about rigging or about maybe settings or transducer placement or just angles and those types of things? Like, I feel like those are part of the conversation now too. You know, a lot of this stuff, it comes out of the box and there's sort of a pamphlet, you know, or there's sort of a diagram as to how it's supposed to be. And, you know, default settings are pretty good. And that stuff's all probably pretty true. But I've had enough conversations to know you tournament guys, people that are on a high level with this stuff, are tinkering all the time. There's a lot of settings, a lot of transducer angles. Like, there's a lot of and I like kind of what you're talking about. I think more applicable to more people that are outside of the tournament world. I think that having that arm, you know, or that external something towards the back of the boat, or at least that can move around in the boat, you know, to be mentioned, I think that's such a more universal, but there's so much more tinkering going on. What can you tell me there? Just like things you've learned from, you know, from a rigging standpoint, or just from a versatility standpoint, or just some tips and tricks. Like, what does that conversation look like for you? Things you've learned over the years?
I would say maybe a tip or trick that I think to give people a quick understanding on just their ability to comprehend what they're using is I see so many people that are trying to have their range set out over 100 feet all the time, and trying to grasp such a large area. And the first thing I would tell everybody, when you first get forward-facing sonar, is to maybe run it in the forward mode, like 40 to 60 foot of range, to get more comfortable just deciphering what the screen is telling you. So, you know, with forward-facing sonar, I don't care which brand it is, there's no history involved. So, you know, as we've grown up or we've learned what our sonar is telling us, there's always been a history, and that history on the screen goes typically from left to right. So the stuff on the left-hand side of the screen is the oldest information. Well, forward-facing sonar is basically live sonar. So it's there and it's gone. And I think by shrinking the range down, it helps people to understand and get a better idea of what they're using and what they're looking at. So I think that's one common mistake is if someone gets it for the first time and instantaneously what they want to do is set the range out as far as they can humanly see it. And really, you think about it, it doesn't matter if you have a 9-inch, a 10-inch, a 12-inch screen, whatever it is, you're just shrinking up that screen to fit the range. And so whether you're at 40 feet or 120, you can only utilize the 10 inches of the screen. So to get better clarity and a better idea of what you're looking at, I'd tell people to start at 40 to 60 feet just to help you to kind of decipher what you're doing at first.
You know, tell me a little bit about your experience where, you know, some of the experiences where you felt like it was really impactful, you know, both whether you were seeing fish that you were casting at to catch, but I'm even more curious about the other side of things, like utilizing it for things other than catching an individual fish, you know, and just the scenarios you've been in there.
Well, I think a couple of the things that have fascinated me the most are just where we're finding walleyes, whether it's in the water column or whether it's off the structure, back on the structure. Like, there's a specific instance I have at Lake Sakakawea a couple of years ago where we were fishing a break line, say 20, 25 feet. And I actually was anchor locked and we were using glide baits and we were catching a lot of fish and it was a lot of fun. Well, I happened to swing my Bruce City pole up onto the rock point that we were off of probably, I don't know, 60, 80 feet. And it was shallow. It came up to like 2 feet. And I look and there's fish swimming around up in this 2 feet of water. So I dig in my rod box, happen to have a jig and I think it was a Champ Swimmer, even a paddle bait. And I throw it up there and I catch a 22 incher on like my second cast. And I'm like, wow, like, traditionally, I'm thinking, okay, all the fish are in 20 to 25 feet. We're having a great day. Well, as I scanned up, I seen them up shallow. So I make a couple casts, catch a good one. Well, the story gets better. So the boat is still anchor locked. I happen to swing the transducer outside the break. And I look in over 40 feet of water on the outside of the break. There's some fish piled up out there. Well, I grab a glide bait back, throw out over 40 feet, and I catch a 24 incher. And I think that was maybe one of those moments, like that big aha moment where I was like, holy crap, this thing is completely changing where these fish are and how they're relating to the structure. And even on a particular day, even on a particular couple minutes, we're literally catching fish from 2 to 40 feet without even moving the boat. And I can tell you prior to having that, I wouldn't have either tried it, wouldn't have maybe had the confidence to throw up into 2 feet and then off the side of the break as well. But that is one of those aha moments where it's like these walleyes were literally all the way up on the break in 2 feet, all the way off the break in 40 feet. And they weren't just everywhere in between. And so that was one of those moments where forward-facing sonar really changed my outlook on how walleyes relate, and again, even in a particular moment where they can be in different depths feeding at the same time. And I've now seen that fast forward 2 years later and numerous other instances that were very similar. But those are the things. And another example was we're on Mille Lacs the first year we had our forward-facing sonar. And we were rigging on some mud flats, and I'll never forget it. It was actually me and Bill Shimoda together. I was helping him pre-fish for an event. And as we were working a mud flat, like 25 feet, there was a school of six walleyes that were in front of the boat, and we literally watched them swim out away from the boat and slide back in behind us. So even in 25 feet of water, those fish felt us and moved around the boat, went from in front of us to outside of us to behind us, back on the structure. And those are the instances where you're just like, wow, this is teaching me so much about walleyes, walleye behavior, and those types of things. And I think that's why this is a subject I could literally spend hours, because it's become infinite to the number of ways it can help you and help you both catch fish and learn how fish behave in the water.
In your own experience and learning, like some situations where having it on your trolling motor is absolutely the deal. Maybe some bites or patterns, you know, places, times of year, whatever, or just some situations where you know that would be way too hectic and not the deal.
Well, I mean, the first thing is I think when the trolling motors came out with spot lock or anchor lock, it changed how much or how efficiently we could fish spots by being anchored without having to throw the anchor out, let out 50 to 100 feet of rope. And I think that's the one instance that immediately sticks out to me is, like, I fish a lot in Minnesota, so I love to fish weed edges. I love to fish pockets. Well, if the wind's howling in there, it is so easy to hit the anchor lock on my trolling motor and literally scan my pole along that weed edge, find out where those fish are set up, and then make that precise cast without worrying about my boat moving and just continually making the right cast. And then seeing the fish move and being able to just readjust my cast. I know, you know, that's an instance where you're fishing a weed edge. The other instance is, like, we have so many people that listen to this show, I would imagine, that are in like the Bismarck and on the Missouri River system. And they're anchored up a lot fishing behind sandbars and stuff. And again, I feel like to be able to just anchor the boat up, scan around with the pole, and then make the right cast, that's going to make you so much more efficient than trying to be on that trolling motor, fighting the current, fighting the wind, and then trying to locate those fish and then get back, especially for someone that maybe is not blessed enough to be able to fish 100 days a year. I mean, they've got a few days a year to get out and make the most of their time. Well, that's where the technology in your trolling motor with the anchor lock, you can really dissect some of these spots by having it, you know, on a pole and being able to just point it, see what you see, cast out right to where your pole's pointing. So those are some specific instances where, just as the average guy going out, can really take advantage of two different technologies together to help you catch more fish.
I mean, the lithium battery world is definitely changing the game in more ways than one, but to apply to, you know, the performance and you know, powering these big sonar units in our boats and just all the power that we already have in the boats, you know, it's, you know, all the stuff that, you know, all the batteries and everything we got going on. Where does that fit in this conversation for you? Are you a lithium battery guy? Like, I don't know if you're with a company or not or whatever, but like for you, do you feel like that's a big player in the performance and just the usability?
It is. You know, I'm not sponsored by, or I don't have a direct relationship. I've been running Amp batteries for a couple years just because that's the one I got. I've happened to meet the owner and felt comfortable buying the batteries from him. But a couple of the things with that is forward-facing sonar, specifically like even the Lowrance stuff that I'm using, the performance of it operates at a peak, obviously, with the higher voltage. So the one thing about lithium is you have that higher voltage output until you don't, and then they're pretty much done for the day. So I can tell you that I feel like the clarity and what you're seeing, you have a much longer runtime of peak performance with the lithium batteries with the technology, because it doesn't drop off until that battery is pretty much done for the day. So I do feel like you benefit. I know either prior or even when I'm at the end of my battery cycle for the day, or if I haven't charged it for a day or two, you definitely start to see a loss in performance as that voltage drops. So I do feel like lithium is a huge player. And then if you're using multiple screens, you know, all the forward facing sonar utilizes extra boxes and modules. So you want to be running as high of voltage as you can with as much capacity as possible. Now, just like screen size, it all comes with a price. So you have to figure out what you can afford, but It does definitely help to have, you know, the higher amperage rating, the higher voltage definitely gives you a better view and better clarity with your with your electrons.
This episode of the JMO Podcast is brought to you by Shields. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Now, Devil's Lake, North Dakota is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. We talk about the fishing all the time on this show, but to find out what the lake and the community has to offer, which is way more than we ever talk about on this show, you can head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. Also, our favorite, the fishing tab. It's going to give you real-time fishing reports, directions to fish cleaning stations and boat landings and shore fishing piers, which are awesome, by the way. Also, it's going to give you a list of options for boat rentals or guide services and bait shops. Everything that you need to plan your next adventure in Devil's Lake is at devilslakend.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. I feel like that's a worthwhile point to make because, you know, I don't know, I've had some lithium battery conversations on this podcast that were very enlightening. Like, I just learned a lot about the performance of them and all that. And it's kind of an ongoing thing for me. And I enjoy it, just learning that technology. And, you know, for me personally, just maybe this is just how I was brought up. But, you know, yeah, you make your buying decisions for things like a hobby, like fishing, you know, even if it's like your favorite hobby and it's what you spend all your money on or whatever it is. I just always felt like people would, you know, there's some sticker shock out there, but I feel like just knowing a little bit more, like it's the right tool for the job. People are buying these things. Like, people are willing to spend the money. So it's not as much of a price check. It's more just the information and knowing whether or not it's the right tool for their job. And when somebody uses it, you know, you're going to use it more than 99.9% of the people that listen to this episode ever aren't going to fish as many days a year as you and utilize forward sonar so, you know, regularly. But I think that's what makes your opinion important to me anyways, that, you know, I would rather hear from you that you feel like it's the right tool for you, and you do it more than I do. So if I have the budget, I just want to make sure I'm looking in the right direction. You know what I mean?
Well, and I always, I mean, I don't chuckle, but you know, someone will spend say $1,500-$1,600 on their forward facing sonar. They're going to spend two or three thousand or more for their, like, for their head unit. They'll spend the money on the lithium, and then one thing, like, I have no affiliation with is wiring, and then they're gonna run crappy wires to it, and it's like, you know, you've already spent $4,000, maybe even more. Don't skimp out on another $100 of wiring to save your money, because again, that's what transports and transfers that power to the unit. So don't lose it all because you were trying to skimp by and save yourself $50 on inexpensive wiring. And I've seen people do that, and that's, you know, this is more a kind of off topic, but I feel like it all bleeds together, because if you want the most out of it, you want, you know, the best picture, and you've spent all the money already, get yourself to spend just that little bit more to make sure, like, even the wiring and stuff from the battery to your units is of a high quality and the right gauge for sure.
Oh yeah, I love that you bring that up, man. I love it. I've done not enough. I feel like, you know, as this podcast continues to grow and I do more, I like these conversations where, you know, I mean, we can always talk about fishing. We're never going to get tired about talking about catching walleyes, but some of these off the water conversations where we're really educating people, because that's such a more common thing now, you know, Well, maybe that's wrong to say, but it's really common for people to dabble in their own boat rigging because there's a lot of expense to all this stuff. And one way to maybe cut costs is to just be a handyman and get in your own boat and do it. And, you know, there's always been guys like that, you know, but, you know, even in these high dollar units, and I think that those are things that, you know, they might not do it to cut costs. They might just not do it because they didn't otherwise know, you know?
Well, and that's just it. And I mean, I always appreciate someone that tunes into a podcast, picks up a magazine. I mean, my wife was just telling somebody today that I have kept like every magazine and fishing article for 25 years and still will reference it. And the reason I bring that up is because it's information. And I feel like so much of a person's success on the water, and success is obviously measured in many different ways. I mean, when you get out, it's all relative. If you get out in a more limited basis, that time is very precious to you and you want to make the most of it. Well, if you've had the opportunity to be educated, to tune in and to absorb knowledge, it's going to help you on the water. So I think you're right on point there. Is any kind of this information that you can provide someone will absolutely help them catch more fish. So, I mean, it's all, if you can put it all into the mixing bowl, I feel like the recipe comes out way better than if you only dabble in techniques, you only dabble in presentations, and you skip some of the other things that are, to me, just as valuable as what's attached to your line.
So much of fishing happens off the water, or we spend so much more time off the water thinking about fishing, and it's like there's just a lot of value, I think, to just putting it to yourself to just learn about stuff. It just kind of heightens your fishing IQ in general, and just any conversation that you ever enter, it's like it all equals. There's going to be tidbits that end up, like you said, there's going to be tidbits that just heighten your experiences out there, that, you know, the memories that you make and the fish catches all in one, for sure.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, you think about it, even if you fish at a higher level and you're fortunate enough to fish, even to say throw it 100 days a year. Well, it is where we're sitting on land, not fishing. So unless you are a blessed, you know, guide, maybe that's running a 12-month a year guide service, most people are going to spend more time on land, not fishing, then they're going to get to spend fishing on an annual basis. So there are so many things that you can pick up, you know, when you're not fishing. So that's why, as you know, anytime you've reached out to do a podcast, I'm always willing. I love trying to share any kind of tidbits I can to help someone else have success on the water. And like you said, it's all judged differently. Whether you're just trying to catch a few for your family, you're just trying to get out and relax, whatever it is, I'm more than willing to try and help someone catch some more fish.
Let's talk about shallow walleyes. Like, how do we incorporate or utilize forward sonar to the fullest this spring, when we're fishing walleyes in shallow, cold, clear water?
Well, you kind of said a couple things there. Cold, clear water. So as the ice goes off and the algae hasn't bloomed, you're dealing with a lot of clear water. Well, what forward-facing sonar does, first off, is keeps you away from the fish as far as getting to that right casting distance to not spook them and to be able to catch them. And that's the one thing that I've really noticed utilizing forward-facing sonar in shallow water is how spooky fish are and how you're able to see them and present your bait to them before they know that you're around them. So you're right, spring of the year, you know, whether you're talking Missouri River, you're talking some of the border waters, fish are shallow. The water's warmer. A lot of fish are thinking about spawning. So, you know, I'm a big jig guy. So if I can pitch a jig and some sort of plastic at them, that's what I'm doing. And forward-facing sonar allows you to kind of judge that fish's behavior and see them without them seeing you. So, you know, if I go in and I try to fish an aggressive paddle tail, say, for example, and the fish are skittish of it, well, then I know maybe I got to switch to a fluke style bait or vice versa. So you're able to kind of judge that fish behavior, and you're able to do it without spooking them off of spots by staying off them. Plus, it gives you the confidence to know there are definitely fish in that shallow water because you're able to see them without them seeing you. So those are the, you know, a couple of just overviews of why forward-facing sonar has really changed shallow water fishing in particular.
Fishing walleyes in shallow water definitely requires some success to like get comfortable and confident with it. And I think one of the things, like once we realize that they're spooky from the boat, like there's all kinds of reasons to be like it's kind of an intimidating thing, or you always feel like, you know, I'm probably not maximizing my scenario. One thing that I always struggle with confidence is like, I feel like spring, cold, clear water, I'm thinking you got to go low and slow. I'm always lightening my jig up. It's hard to make a cast. And especially in the spring, there's probably some wind, you know, hopefully a ripple on the water. But like, you know, just some, what are some things that you do to be efficient and really do it? You know, make those casts. Maybe it's a gear recommendation, your setup, you know, your line selection. Like, what are some things that you feel well, like make it work for you?
Well, I think one thing is, I think to cut the curve for a lot of people is super lines in general just add a lot of added sensitivity. However, with the no stretch characteristics of it and being able to see it and the fish see it, I have almost 100% tying on fluorocarbon leaders. And I feel like, especially with shallow, super clear waters, utilizing just fluorocarbon in general is a big deal. The other thing is, and you kind of talked about it, is a person's mentality always is like smaller, lighter. It is amazing to me how those fish are still very aggressive and you do not have to downsize to that point. You're able to fish bigger jigs and bigger paddle tails, stuff like that. Because a lot of times, especially prior and, you know, pre and post spawn, for sure, those fish are willing to eat. So, you know, I typically try to use something bigger when I first go out, just because the reactionary bites, you can figure out if the fish are hot. And then with forward-facing sonar, if you're realizing that, oh, those fish just aren't reacting today to my aggressive presentation, well, then that's when you can maybe switch to like a fluke style, downsize your jig, slow your cadence down. And prior, we had to trust more of our feel on the water because you really didn't know if there was a fish laying up in the bank in 1 or 2 feet of water because you weren't going to drive your boat over the top of them. And if you did, they were going to spook. So you wanted to stay off them. Well, now, if I'm seeing them on forward-facing sonar and they're not biting, well, now I know I've got to make some technique switches. I've got to make some jig cadence switches, color switches, all of those things to see what I can do to make those fish trigger.
I mean, talking about the size, you know, the size profiles in this spring has been one of the more liberating pieces of information that I've put into action is, you know, sometimes low and slow, you know, I guess I've said this even on recent podcasts that I think maybe I'm the only one again, but I think people can relate to this. You know, we think something slow and subtle, you know, it's like hair jigs or whatever. So often it gets interpreted as downsizing. And I'm that one. Like if I'm not getting, you know, a frequency of bites that I'm looking for, like I'll try smaller for whatever reason. I'm thinking if I go smaller that they'll bite it, but I'm getting less cast. I'm getting less. And in most cases, that's not what's going to make them bite, you know, maintain that efficiency. Larger profiles work in the spring because there's no other young of the year. I mean, yeah, just I'm glad that anglers like you make that point. I'm listening. I think if people take that away in itself, you know, just that size profile, being able to make those casts and just figure out a cadence that works, I think that is phenomenal recommendation.
Well, one year, I'll never forget this, and he's become a friend of mine, but Artie Artendallen that owns Artie's Bait in Orton. We were fishing MWC. This is, I think, 2015-ish. And this is actually how we met. We started an MWC tournament on the exact same spot. And Artie's been a live bait guy, and that's phenomenal. He has a bait shop. Well, we started the tournament right next to Artie. Artie's fishing tiny jigs and fathead minnows. And we're throwing quarter and 3 ounce jigs with 3.5 inch ripple shads. And we were smoking the fish, to which Artie literally yelled, like, "I can't believe what I'm seeing. You guys wailing on them with big plastics, and they were struggling to keep up." And that was a real life experience where a person kind of had to be there to see it. The results at the end of the event showed it. But that was one of those instances, I'm sure I'm not speaking for him, but where even Artie, who's a very successful angler, was like, wow, his eyes were completely opened up to that. Here we're fishing a big paddle tail early in the season, and we are absolutely destroying big walleyes on Big Stone down in Ortonville.
Yeah, yeah, he's got that bait shop down in Ortonville on Big Stone. Yeah. I feel like these are interesting stories from somebody like you that's been tournament fishing long enough. Like, you have the perspective. You could probably like articulate these memories and stories of like how many of the things from 10 or 15 years ago were just these unbelievable, like monumental happenings in or understandings in the tournament fishing world, especially with walleyes, that now with forward sonar, we look back on it and it's like, oh, that's totally what was going on.
Well, it's exactly that. And I mean, there's been numerous instances where just your experience on the water and something maybe that you've had happen to you, you know, you kind of give that sideways look and go, I wonder what was going on there, but it seemed to work. Well, with getting the forward facing sonar education, it's really been like, that's kind of the deal. And you know, it's just reconfirmed maybe, or it's just opened up a lot of stuff. I mean, it's just fascinating on the stuff that you see. Again, we've been reading about walleye spooking by the boat for years, but when you can visually see them swim out and around the boat and then go right back to where they were, you just go, oh, it's no wonder guys for years on Mille Lacs we're using super light sinkers, super long leaders, and getting them out from the boat and as far away as possible. Well, because they're basically spooking the fish out, and then the fish are sliding back in right where they wanted to be, and then their bait or their presentation is back in the fish catching zone. But that fish has literally moved from in front of the boat, outside the boat, and then come behind and then bit. And that's a couple of those instances where you go like, oh, so guys were doing that without even really, I think, comprehending or understanding on what those fish were actually doing.
Yeah. How much, this might be the last question. Maybe this is our closer here, and maybe there's nothing. But, you know, especially in shallow water, I feel like there's potential for this, you know, as far as the sonar itself, the detection of these, especially bigger fish, like with the sonar, the noise from electronics, how much of that are you trying to pay attention to?
Well, there have been specific instances where I have noticed that the fish do feel it and become a little skittish. In fact, there are times when I'm running on my trolling motor, if I see fish, I'll make the cast, I'll actually not point my forward facing sonar at the fish as I'm, you know, actively trying to catch them, because I feel like it's just an added pressure on that thing and they're feeling something. Again, I'm not a fish. I can't tell you exactly what's going on, but I have noticed instances in which you point that forward facing sonar on them and you can tell they're sliding around more then if you actually look at them quick, get the sonar off of them, and then try to catch them. I have noticed a handful of instances that's been the case. I feel like guys sometimes are so enthralled with what they're seeing that they, I would say, become so reliant on it that they're scared to not point the forward-facing sonar on them. But I can tell you, there are times that you will have a better opportunity to catch them if you know they're right there, and then you move that pinging signal off of them while you're trying to actively catch them.
All right, final last question. Is there anything that you used to do regularly, like conceptually, strategically, presentation-wise? Is there anything you used to do regularly that now you just, like, forward sonar is like, well, no, I'm not. I definitely can't do that anymore.
I'll tell you what it's done is I used to think being efficient on the water, you fish the high spots, you know, your high percentage areas. However, now, even if I'm fishing in some high percentage areas and I don't see them, I'm maybe blowing through those areas much quicker than I ever used to. I mean, Tom Wynn is one of the country's best, and I've been fortunate enough to spend a lot of time with him this year at different boat shows and talking to him and listening to some of the messages he's put out there. And that guy, I bet his cast to catch ratio is through the roof because he's looking constantly before he even makes a cast. And I always felt like I actually casted less than a lot of guys because I trusted what I was seeing on my 2D and I only wanted to fish high percentage areas. But now I'm even taking these high percentage areas, and if I don't see them swimming, if I don't see the fish in there, I maybe am not casting to some of my favorite areas, favorite different kinds of locations, if I don't see movement and I don't see the fish set up there. So I actually feel like I'm making less casts now, but my catch rate is so much higher when I do make a cast because I do feel like I know when there's a fish there or not.
I think that's good stuff, man. Thank you for that. Thank you, man. That's Absolutely. Where we'll wrap it up. Yeah, dude, that's where we'll wrap it up. I love it. I love the examples. It's kind of an ongoing conversation in the industry. I can't be doing this so often to keep up with it all the time, but I just love, you know, kind of revisiting some of these off the water topics like rigging, forward sonar, and nobody better than, you know, just somebody with the experience on all sides of it, you know, years of experience tournament angling, you know, but you do it, you mingle with the public, you see other setups, you know, you got the perspective I'm looking for, and I just love the conversation, and it never strays very far away from just the fishing. And just getting those stories and the perspective reflecting on that is exactly what I'm looking for. So I take a lot away from this, man, and I really, really appreciate your time, Corey. I would say this, let's sign it off, unless you think of something else right away.
No, I think your sign off is perfect. And the one thing I'll add is you kind of summarized it there at the end, is at the end of the day, and this is what I do a lot of hands-on classes, but when people buy high-level electronics and rig their boat with that stuff, their number one goal is to catch fish. So tying it all together, with your presentations and your locations, using the electronics, we want you to catch more fish. So it does tie it all in together.
Man, I appreciate it. And we'll let you go down the road. Good luck in Deadwood.
Yep. Thank you, my friend. Take care.
Later. Bye.